So here we are, season six. Sorry, Mark is back from
Mexico.
Mexico, yeah.
And we've got two new guests tonight. And we've got Rod from the
Riot Flooring Company.
Yeah. And we've also got, and we've been trying to get you on for a couple of years because we've done a few bits with you. So Chris, Chris is here from Vanguard.
When you
so
say me, you mean the company.
The company.
Yeah. I just had to make sure what part of the company you was. Whether you was the owner or not.
So the one good thing about having you on is we always struggle on the show to get brands to come on. And I always think it's good to have somebody on the show that would potentially use your product, and then you can sort of debate things, and then this is what we do, and these are the things that we've got coming. I know Mark is an advocate, aren't you?
Yeah, Vanguard, got a big Vanguard. So I was always...
Anti-Vanguard. Anti-roof rack.
Yeah, I was always anti-roof rack, because I always buy a long wheelbase van.
Yeah.
For plumbers, we like 3 metre lengths of copper. The vans now come with like the bulkhead bit you can take out. Mm. So I always used to like to keep all my stuff internally, so there's nothing on show. Mm. But since having that roof rack, put it on.
Has it changed your life?
Yeah, I was going to say your life changed.
I'm a converted man. Honestly, use it. It's not a shameless plug. Yeah, it's not a shameless plug.
Keep going.
Honestly, use it so much. Yeah. It's been spot on. And that one, again, not a shameless plug. It is absolutely solid.
Yeah.
Massively solid roof rack to go on. So, yeah.
I won't say what brand roof rack we've got.
I could probably guess.
Well, maybe we can change
exactly,
that.
We need a new one, actually.
What was your reason then? Because I know a few other people are like, I don't want it on there.
Aesthetically, I'm a diva with my van anyway. Yeah. Aesthetically, B, the old, you'll know exactly what I'm going to say, being a plumber, having the pipe rack on there, people nicking all the pipe out, you go to get it and all your pipe's gone or whatever. Yeah. But the locking end of it is bang on.
Mm-hmm.
That was it really. It's keeping stuff up there. Mm.
But ladders. I think it makes the van look a bit more butch.
Yeah.
Especially with the new wheels on it.
New big chunky wheels, yeah, it does. Do you know what? Now I look at it and it is, it looks right.
I just need
a big set of triple ladders strapped to the roof now just to finish it off.
You're more independent tradespeople.
Yeah.
They are a bit more particular about what they want in their van.
Whereas if I work for a company and they gave me a van, put whatever you want on there.
But the other thing is, you'll have branded workwear, you'll have a branded van, but surely when you look and say if you were turning up at mine and you open the van, it's all Vanguard, it's all kitted out inside, everything looks neat, tidy, you're going to think, that person looks a bit more professional.
Serious,
it's all on the roof rack, or he takes care of all the stuff, the materials that he's bringing to the job, rather than out the back of the van dropping stuff. Yeah. I think it looks, from my perspective, I'd think it look.
One of the things we can do is actually, because we're a manufacturer, we can actually make it with your brand and include it on the...
Oh, stop it. Here we go. That's,
I'm not going to go on to that.
It is
something we can and do.
Mark has just got a twinge. Yeah. Real world plumbing down the side. So what does that entail then for people? Because anybody that's watching and listening might be thinking, well, I didn't realise that. If you can brand stuff.
Yeah, customise it.
Is that colours or is that...
Yeah, colours, branding, particular fleets that are particular, they're really strong branding, really particular.
Orange and black.
Oh,
because we manufacture, we have the facility to be able to do it. The company will tell you that if the numbers are there, it's a bit more different for one particular product, one roof.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about hundreds of particular
products.
Orange
is the new black.
But I think a lot of tradespeople now, in the last 10 years, it's all about that visual.
Completely.
There's so many tradesmen now that have a really good van.
Strong branding.
Big wheels on it, proper writing. Yeah. So if you can do custom roof racks.
Then Mark's in.
Oh,
sign me up again. So one thing that would be great, which we love to do, which again, we don't get invited, so I don't know what we do when we have people in here, whether or not we annoy them or rub them up the wrong way. It would be good to, if you're manufacturing stuff there, or you could show us round, or Mark could come and see something that gets custom made, I'd love to be able to come and film there.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, I'm doing an open day in the summer at Vanguard HQ.
Where's Vanguard HQ?
Exeter.
Right. So, be a nice little trip out. Get Schweb to fly us in.
I know, yeah.
I am looking at doing something for customers and, whoever it may be, for an open day, see all the manufacturing process.
Yeah, that'd be good. Is everything made on site then?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, literally. And then make a bit of a day of it where caterers, barbecue.
Sounds good.
Make a proper day of it.
And when brands do that, I think, and invite people down and give people that behind the scenes look at stuff, I think it opens your eyes up to what goes in. You know, one of your roof racks is X amount of £1,000. Oh, bloody hell, it's that much. But when you see what's gone in, the R&D, the development, where you've had to custom test fit it onto vans to make sure that's working, that bolt lines up with that, it fits every van, then you appreciate the cost involved with it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, if you open the doors up, I think that'll be a good day.
I'll bear you in mind then.
No, I mean, for people watching the YouTube channel, like they don't really, a lot of people will use a roof rack.
We use them.
You might go, well, actually, watching that video of behind the scenes, mine doesn't do that.
Yeah, of course.
Just little things like that. The whole point of the show is to try and educate people to say, well, look at this, look what goes into it, and it goes from there onto your, like, people don't, they install it and they forget about it.
It's like having on the one I've got, I can't remember which one it is, it's got the roller on the back.
Yes.
Having that roller.
It's amazing. Especially
for flooring.
Oh my God, I'm trying to get the carpet on without the roller.
Because you're trying to push it up on it. You push that dead weight up onto just a bar. But that roller. Straight away.
But I've got a question in regards to roof racks, right? The one thing that's really annoying about the one that we have is, once you start driving like over 60 miles
does
per
it go
hour,
yes,
the noise. Like, yeah, is that something that people complain about, or is it
you can get like wind deflectors.
Oh,
all the way they're designed.
You
they
two are like,
there could be aerodynamic.
Tell me more.
Aerodynamic.
Yeah, because the pipe rack on the one that I've got is pointed. Yeah. It's not just a flat.
Yeah,
because a lot of plumbers used to put a length of soil pipe on.
Is it
just
like
a
sky cyclist helmet?
Yeah, that's what it is. But yeah, but that one again, not plugging you. I've been at. On private roads, about 100 mile an hour in the van. Mm. Private roads, not on the roads.
Yeah, private, yeah.
Private.
Private airstrips.
Yeah, fine, absolutely. No noise at all.
You know what you're doing wrong.
Going to have to have a conversation.
In the words of Beyonce, let me upgrade you.
We'll have a chat after.
No worries.
So, I mean, from your perspective, because obviously you were apprehensive about putting it on, what made you put yours on? Was it just purely for your job specifically?
The problem is, when you're driving in London, it's so hard to maneuver in a like 3 meter or 4 meter van. Like, it is the worst thing in the world. So I like to keep our van sizes to like the van custom, transit custom, or the vans that we've recently just got is a Vauxhall Vivara.
That's what I've got. Long wheelbase.
So that's been amazing. But when we're then doing, so when we're doing like more commercial work and you're using your 2 meter vinyls, that can just go in the back. Yep. But when you're doing carpet jobs and you're doing a room that's like a 6x4 and you've got the big 4 meter roll, that needs to go onto the roof unless you're bending it.
Yeah.
Mm. Who would you say your target market is for your product? Electricians, plumbers? Because it may well be that there is carpet
demand for it.
To be honest, it's quite vast. So we would deal with independent tradespeople. Mm. We deal with online retailers, builder merchants that will list our products online. So your plumbers, your electricians can purchase the products online. Mm. And then we deal with big van converters, supply and fit companies. So you might have Sky or a fleet of vehicles. They might have 200 vans.
Yeah. Wow.
And they all need roof bars, roof racks, internal racking, security locks, whatever it may be. Mm. They will take it to said van converter and they will fit their van
fit out the lot,
whatever they need. So,
do companies like Sky customise stuff? You know, like obviously custom branding. Do they do any of that with you?
No.
Too tight?
A lot of the, it's all about cost. Yeah. To them, they're the kind of company that a roof bar is just a roof bar.
Yeah.
They don't care what it looks like. It's just how much it costs and will it do the job?
Yeah.
They have the whistling ones.
Special one.
So, yeah, we've got our so many different custom segments.
But yeah, I suppose racking out the internals of vans as well, that's become a massive thing isn't it?
Don't know how you do it, because every van's different. Like, we're doing workwear and we've sort of branched into that at the moment, and just trousers, you know, you've got short, long leg, regular.
Oh, I know this one. What is it? You've got skews. I remember that.
Yeah, that's skews. Right.
I know this one.
I know it. You've got to have loads of the same thing, haven't you?
But basically, in business, you want to just keep it simple and just have something where it's one size, one size fits
all.
It's you know, when you start getting into shoes, you've got to have size 9, size 9.5, size 10, size 10, and then people are like, oh, I need a 14.
Yeah. But that's the thing with vans, isn't it? There's that many vans now. Luckily, like the one that me and Rod have got, the Vivaro, the new, is it the new Vivaro you've got?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the same as the...
They're all the same, yeah.
They have all got...
Toyota, yeah, yeah, Peugeot.
Yeah, 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 the Peugeot Expert. So that's our second van that we just got.
Yeah.
So we've got a Peugeot Expert, so we've got one of each. And they near enough.
Yeah, exactly. They're amazing.
But all the back, from your point of view, all the back is the same, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So those four vans are one skew.
Effectively.
One skew.
Effectively,
That's great for business, though. It's when you've got to, like, customise.
It's such a minefield. Like, for me, when I got into the industry a few years back, trying to get your head around the different types of vans, L1, H1, H3.
Yeah,
The worst is when people upgrade them, and it's just one slight thing. And you think, is that it?
Yeah.
Or like the new custom.
Like the iPhone, every year you've got to have a new case.
New one,
just make it the same size.
Yeah, the new custom, which has just come out. We've had our MPD team and our engineers have all had to develop new locks, new roof bars.
Yeah,
because
the fixing points are different, or the shape of the vehicle is different, and it's you know, that takes time.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is different for you. So when a new product comes out, initially it's going to be lower take up, unless it's like a Ford Transit and they haven't updated it for 10 years. Is it that there's a lower take up and then it ramps up as it's been out for a while?
For a particular
model of van.
Yeah, so like your customs, Ford customs, Transits, Mercedes Sprinters, they're probably the more popular vans.
Yeah, so like now, they're just, I think in the last month, released a new Transit.
The new custom, yeah.
So that would that be a different design inside? That's not going to fit your 2022 vans, is it?
No.
So you're going to have to develop a whole
new... Exactly that, yeah. So we've got a whole MPD team internally, we've got senior engineers, and when they know that the vehicle is coming to market, we will start designing and developing
in advance.
We've got the existing products, it's just obviously tweaks, and then we try and then get our hands on the particular vehicle, and then
which is
difficult.
Yeah.
And then our engineers will fit the products to the vehicle, test them, then we've got to draw up all the instructions, and then we've got to be confident that our products are right before we then take it to market. Yeah. And then you've got to do that ahead of your competition. So,
did you find with COVID then, because you know how like hot the secondhand car market was and trying to get like a new car, was that similar then during COVID for vans? So if they launched a van, you couldn't get one
It's still similar,
issue.
Because we're, although we manufacture and supply, we're not in control of vehicle availability. And if we're not dealing with the end fleet, so a Sky directly, for example, we're dealing with the actual van converters.
Yeah.
They're almost like the middleman for us. So they're dependent on the vans coming into them. And if there's a fleet of 200, they only make it six at a time or whatever it may be. So there's so many different moving parts. But vehicle availability is still a big issue. It's picked up and then it dies off, and with EVs that came to the fleet market, which is seemed to have settled down a bit. But there's so many different variables.
And what about like the security side of stuff? Are you doing internal like cages and that? That's becoming a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, not something we do. I mean, as a business, we started off with bulkhead and window grills when we first started as a company. And then we moved into roof accessories and so on. We do bulkheads, window grills.
Yeah, you do the big locks on the doors as well.
We do, we've got a full range of security products. So van crime, as we all know, is quite a big talking point.
Right.
And it's increasing. So it's a huge area for us.
Yeah.
We only moved into locks about 4 years ago. So there is a particular company that have been in the industry for 20 years and the market leader for security products, alarms. And then we moved into it about 4 years ago because the market...
The demand.
It's one of those, it's a difficult one because we've got a solution to the problem. But 9 times out of 10, the people that come to us are because their customer or them directly have been affected, whether it be one van or a fleet of vans. So they're keeping us, you know, it's great for business, but it's kind of that emotional side of it
that
you have to deal with as well. Especially if you're an independent, that is your livelihood.
Yeah.
If it's tool theft, for example.
But I've seen some of them where they put them internal cages in. So you open the slide and you've got the cage there.
It's a bit like the dog units for the police cars.
Similar to that.
Yeah.
But it's also, the ones I've seen have got quite wide sides around it, so the door isn't the full width of your door. So like, say for instance, you're getting carpets in and out, and you've got, say you've got 2 metres, and you're taking out 400 off each side to get the swing of the door.
Yeah.
Ladies and gents, just a quick one to say a huge thank you to our new headline sponsor, CT1, the best sealants on the market, voted for by the British public. Not only that, it's made in Britain as well. So go and support a product and a brand that is made in the UK. But I just want to say to you, they've got a brand new product out, which is the BT1. It's a combination sealant and adhesive like the popular CT1, but it's perfect for keeping a hygienic environment. And it's designed to completely stop the growth of bacteria, microbes, and fungus. And not only that, this stuff is strong. Now, it's going to be available at Travis Perkins, Wicks, Jewson's, and pretty much everywhere else. So there's no excuse not to go and give it a go. So we're really happy to be partnering with CT1.
Let's have a little dabble with Rod's story. See where we started from. So what we try and do is see how you got into your industry you're in, you know, from not way, way back, but sort of your schooling off, and then see which path you took.
So, born and raised in London, lived in London, got four siblings, single mum. My dad lived in Tottenham. My mum lived in Edmonton. And we moved to Essex when I was about 14 years old. And I started playing football again. When I started playing football, my football manager had a flooring company. I was like best friends with his son, so I was in and around it. He always done really, really well. When I moved to Essex, I can't remember what car he had, but he always had really nice cars, like really nice cars.
It's all about the tradesmen and the cars.
Yeah, he had really nice cars.
that's what got me into what I do. Someone had a nice car.
And so I was like, oh, this is
how'd you get that?
This is interesting. So went to school, obviously finished school, went to college, finished college.
What was you doing at college?
I've always loved business, genuinely. Like, I've always loved business. So the typical selling stuff in school, so on. And when I finished school, I just didn't want to go to college and then study again. I hated studying. So at school, one of the advisors of what you can do when you go on to college advised, it'd be good if you went on to a new course that I started, which was called Enterprise and Entrepreneurship on the Peter Jones Academy. So Peter Jones from Dragon's Den
had this
academy course in college. And essentially with the course, you had to, it was a 1-year course, and alongside the course, you had to start something called a micro business, which you essentially run alongside of the course. And as you're going along the course, it's like teaching you things within how to do business, like cash flow, so on. So I thought it'd be a really good idea to start something called the College Lottery, So started selling raffle tickets for like £2, and every Friday the winner could win like a laptop or something. But then the college ended up coming to me like 3 weeks in saying,
buying it off you for like 20 grand.
You can't do this.
They literally said, someone has been in touch from like the Gambling Commission. You can't just sell raffle tickets and keep all of the money. I don't know what the setup was. Essentially, it was saying it was too similar like a lottery. I'm sure there was ways around it, but I didn't know.
You must have sold a fair few then for them to get wind of it.
Yeah, I think it was like £20,000 worth or something.
Shit.
Yeah, because I was selling a ticket at like £2 each, and I think within the month I maybe sold. It was £2 to £5, and it ended up being around that sort of figure, genuinely. That got shut down quick, and then
we won our cut.
That was Peter Jones going. I'm doing that.
I got threatened with suspension from school because I went to Macro. You know Macro, where you buy everything in bulk. Bought all the sweets in bulk and stood round the corner from the tuck shop and almost put them out of business.
Really?
I think it's a great idea for people that want to make money in school. It's better than doing
I remember I had a lad who I knew at school. He had a uncle in Cyprus. He would send videotapes back with moody copies of films coming out. So I would rent them out at school, these moody copies, for like £2 a night or whatever. But yeah, everyone's got a little side hustle at school, haven't they? And I think it builds that knowledge of going, you're a go-getter, ain't you?
Yeah, of course. Mm. Yeah, so after that, I went into starting like a mini record label with one of my friends who's a music artist. I ended up finishing the course, and then from there, I went and worked for my old football manager. He was my football manager from like 14 to 21. So I'd see him on the weekends. His cars would always get better every year. Yeah. So I finished college, and then I went and worked for him within his flooring company. So that was from like 17 to like 20. And he always done like council social housing work. So I was out on the road for a few years and then I went into the office, started off as a T-boy. By the time I was 20, I was like managing a few contracts. But you'd always, like, I would always deal with so much ag. Like, I'd deal with ag with tenants, fitters and so on. So that sort of like scarred me a little bit. I was like, oh, bloody hell, this is hard.
You're just in the shit side of it, then, just the stress.
And then I ended up going into insurance.
Right.
And selling life and health insurance. And then I'd done that for a few
years. I need
some of that. I can hit you up. I've still got my qualifications. So I'd done that for a few years. And then Chris, because I'd still see him at football here and there. At this time, I was around 22. And he was like, Rod, you've got to come back. Like, you've got to come back to work. You've got to come back to work. And I said to him, I will only come back.
If I don't have to do that.
If I said, I'll only come back if you allow me to set up a side of the company that does private work. Yeah. We'll do the work and obviously I'll just take a commission as well. And he said, right, absolutely fine, that's no problem. So yeah, I went back and I was running that with his son. And yeah, we only done like private work. Obviously you go, you show samples.
So did you put into that then?
No.
You just said to him, I want to do this.
Yeah, I said, if I'm coming back.
I don't want to do that.
I said, I don't want to. Because with the social housing work, it sounds bad. And before I go ahead, that's what we like. We specialise in social housing work now.
Right. But, the tables are turned.
Yeah. But I was like, because essentially you was always dealing with the ag of tenants when people weren't turning up on time and so on. Any problems I had to deal with. And it turns out that, I guess it was kind of that way with his company because things just weren't ran as well, essentially. But I said, I'll only come back if we set up a private side. So I came back, set up a private side. Obviously, I would get the leads in, go measure the jobs, show the samples, get the work in. Essentially, we'd use his fitters, his supplier accounts and so on. And I don't know if you guys speak figures on here when you're talking about jobs, but within like 10 months of setting that side up, we'd done like 170 grand's worth of private work.
Nice.
So I said to him in like the November time, like the following year, I said, I think I'm just going to go and set this up on my own. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah. Why would you not?
Yeah, I didn't.
You were a substitute after that. you ain't playing against me.
So, started my company in 20. So, I started my company in November 2019. And obviously, we went flying because obviously I was getting work in anyway.
Mm.
And then, it was like January, February time.
COVID hit.
It started going like strangely quiet. Like we was getting so much work and so many leads. Mm. And then all of a sudden, like people weren't posting jobs on places like My Builder and so on. It was just really weird.
Yeah.
And at that point, I didn't tie it in with COVID.
What date? What was that? January, February?
So it came in March. I started the company with his son in November 2019.
Yeah.
COVID sort of come about in like January, February.
Yeah.
And then because his dad specialised in social housing, that was still classed as essential work.
Yeah.
So he said, I'm going to leave our company and just go and work with my dad whilst all of this is going on.
Yeah.
And he sort of left me in the...
Dropped you in it a bit.
So I said to him, look, I'm going to get started again on my own. Like, we can either, and in hindsight, that me and him were never going to be good business partners anyway. Mm. He was kind of like a good friend of mine, but it would have never worked.
He still mates now?
Kind of, We just don't speak much. It's a little bit sad because I grew up with him from 14. Yeah. He was like my strike partner for his dad's team.
But that just put a bit of a strain on
him. It was like, he just went and worked with his dad, obviously didn't worry about my income and so on. But I understand these things happen. I said, you know, I'm going to get started on my own.
Yeah.
So I set up the Riot Flooring in March 2020. We didn't really start trading until like June, July sort of time. And yeah, it's been a very interesting story since.
Right. You set up in the midst.
You set up when no one knew what the hell was going to happen.
No, it was strange. It was such strange times. But then what was happening? We was initially, when I set up in June and July again, we was flying because everyone was at home. It felt like everyone had money. There was a lot of money. Yeah. So
everyone had money and then no one's got it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone had money. So many people were getting their houses done. Mm. So we was doing a lot of residential. And then a year later, I got the opportunity to get on board with a large maintenance company that specialised in social housing. And I was like, Right, well, I said I wouldn't.
I was going to say, what is the thing that you don't want to know?
Yeah. I'm waiting for it to go. I said I wouldn't.
But from the way they're not,
he's like, well, show me the money.
Jerry Maguire.
But from a business perspective, I was like, okay, right, let's give it a go and see what it's like. And we haven't looked back since. Like it started with me and my main fitter, who still works with us now, out in a van. And last year we was a team of 14 full time. And then just before Christmas, I actually scaled that back down a little bit because we sort of had cash flow issues, and we kind of grew too fast. That's the truth.
Yeah.
But I think we grew too fast. And obviously this is like my first proper business I ever had.
It's interesting to hear you say that because a lot of people will let that swallow them up. When you can not admit, but acknowledge that we've grown too fast, we need to tweak it.
A lot of people that have come on have said the same thing. Ryan SQ2 said the same thing when he was on. And he just said, I wanted to take on too much too soon. Dave Alward.
Yeah.
And you've got to have the infrastructure.
Definitely.
The problem is, though, is you get offers of a lot of work and you sit there and you think, oh, I've had to turn that down. And on the third time, you think, I'll take it on.
But it running the business and going through, last year just finished was the biggest year we've had, as I said. But it's taught me so many lessons. It's taught me that, not to grow too fast. Obviously, from a fitter's perspective as well, being careful with who you take on, because you can't, as you get bigger, you can't control the quality of people's work.
The issue is, if you want to grow, Charlie Mullins, hate him or love him, he said the only way to grow that business is if you come back off the tools. He says, you have to do you have to do it in a stage. Okay, I'm going to go and do this job, but then I'm going to leave you to do that job because I've set you up with it.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go and check on everybody else's work. And eventually he said he was just, and then he got people in to manage those people what I expect.
But and that's what you have to do. Like, we took our first, even though we was at 13 people, it was 10 fitters that were full time. You had me, you had Danielle in the office, who's been with me since the start, and then we had a guy going out surveying, but they were all still self-employed. And then in September, I took someone on from a company much bigger than us, but he's come on quite a fairly decent salary because of his experience. So I'm slowly putting things in place where I'm not having to be on site as much and managing things as much. But it's been so difficult.
The difficulty with trades as well is you've probably done it yourself. You've probably done it. Well, I could do that myself.
Why am I
making money for somebody else? But actually, not everybody can.
It's funny
you say that
because as well, I tell people all the time, I wouldn't class myself as a floor layer. When I tell people that, they think that I'm winding them up, but you have to remember, I was out on the road when I first got into the industry for a few months, and then I went into the office.
Right, okay.
So in terms of I wouldn't advise me to go and lay your house in flooring.
Really?
No. There is things that I can fit flooring, but not to the standard as a floor fitter that's been fitting for 10 years.
So that's the same sort of thing. If I do a bathroom, someone will come to me to do the whole bathroom. I can tile. I've tiled my house, but I wouldn't tile a customer's house.
Honestly, because
I get my tiler. He's a professional. Yeah, he's quicker. Yeah. I can then leave him for 2 days doing that. I can go to another job and earn money. So I get the right guy for the right job. Yeah.
So I was don't get me wrong. As I said, I can do. There isn't anything that a floor fitter could speak to me about or show me that I couldn't do, but my background wasn't floor fitting for years. Right. When I started my business, obviously my partner was a floor fitter, so I was kind of thrown into the deep end. And from running a business perspective, we probably grew really quickly because obviously I had so much knowledge from the office side. And then it was just managing the office and the on the roadside. Literally just last week, one of our fitters had to shoot from a job because it was really late, and I was like, I'll just go and finish it myself. So I can.
Yeah, you got enough to get you by.
Yeah, of course. But there's been so many tough times. But I think where I always just ask, I'm such an inquisitive person. I'm so nosy, and successful. I love seeing people do well and successful people. Yeah. So when we do certain jobs or we was going to certain people's houses, I always ask business people questions. And I went through a really difficult period in the beginning of 2023 where we took on our third fitter. And every time we would take someone on, that we would struggle with that fitter. He wouldn't do the jobs well. He wouldn't come on time. We had so many crazy stories.
Because you've got such a high work ethic. You'd want someone to be the same as you. Yeah. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, so I got to a point where I felt like this wasn't going to work because we're into our third fitter. They just can't seem to get the grips of the social housing work because it needs to be done within a certain amount of speed because most things are done on set rates. Mm. So I thought it wasn't going to work, but it was only when I was speaking to a guy that had a huge construction company and I was saying, like, this is the issues I'm struggling with. And he was like, to be fair, every five people we take on, we only end up keeping one. And then right. And then it was like, oh, that...
Similar in here.
Yeah, and then it was like...
No, when you started in that picture, you know, when everybody's in here on that picture, there was you, there was Nick, there was... Louis was on it.
Claudia.
So out of seven people we took on, there's only Abby, you and...
Louis.
What was that taking on uni like?
So basically during COVID we grew rapidly. Yeah. I think we hired about eight or nine people and we've only got three of them left.
Yeah. Right.
Everybody else has gone.
And it was only, and that's what I've learned as well, like there's certain stages. If I didn't speak to him and ask him that, I would have probably then took on a fourth person and be like, oh, this is definitely not going to work.
You think it's you doing something wrong?
Yeah, but when he told me no, like, because his company is huge. I think they've got 55 full-time staff. And when he said no, every five tradesmen I take on, we only end up with one good one. I was like, oh, well, that's my problem. I haven't got to try in five people yet. So it's all these little things that as time went on, I was realising it's just a process and it's just understanding that it's a process.
Hire slow, fire fast.
That's Al's motto.
You've got to protect your brand as well, haven't you?
Like yeah, 100%.
The quality of work that you fit as a doing is reflective.
It's so key.
Yeah, because your name above the door,
and
isn't it?
That's hard to manage because, right, if, I don't know, you put up an ad and someone, you know, applies for it, they show you their CV, they give you references, even with references and so on, you can't... guarantee someone's work until they go and do a job for you.
Yeah.
So if they go and mess it up, like you can only see how good they are from doing a job for you. So it's like it's such a tricky scenario to navigate, and it's just about managing that as best as you can. Yeah. And yeah, as time has gone on, it's like every time I've took someone on and something's gone wrong, I've then made sure the next person is capable of.
Do you doing take so. That personally when you've hired someone and they've got? Do you go? What am I doing wrong to take that guy on? Mm. Have I not done my due diligence on it?
Initially, I did because I just thought, oh, the type of work we're doing is wrong, or I just felt like there was something wrong and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And it was, and as I said, it wasn't until, for example, it sounds so silly, but when I took my first fitter on, it was kind of like through a recommendation. So I didn't really ask for any references from companies that he's worked for. So then when it come to, so then he messed up and then we'd take the next person on, so it'd be like, oh, can you make sure you give us references? But then there'd be another thing that I'd sort of forget to check. So when they show the references and they're great and then they end up messing up on something else, so then when you then take on the third person, he's like, can you show me your references? Can you show me this? And then as time
goes
on...
Here's a room, can you carpet that roof, do that, floor that room out.
And then one of the things that really harmed us, I don't know if you see, I posted a TikTok where I said, essentially we scaled back from 14 to a team of 10 because one thing that I'd done last year was when we ended up getting a lot of work, I would take on too many people too quickly and then I would keep them for too long. So I might put them on a project that's like a 2-week project, then it wouldn't go as well. But I'm like, we've got another really big project to do. So I'd put them on it. And then before you know it, you've got two guys with 2 months worth of wages that you need to pay.
Yeah.
And that's bit us in the arse really bad.
That's all the other stuff, the national insurance.
And yeah,
tax
and yeah.
Pensions, if you have to pay any pensions.
Yeah, so it's like all of those type of things where now it's like I've made a decision. If we're going to take someone on, they've got like 5 days to show us what they're capable of. And there's all these like small decisions.
Rod, if you got a fitter where you look on Instagram and like try and gauge the quality there, would you ever go out to a job that they have done and see the work in person? It's quite difficult.
Yeah,
I suppose.
It's just difficult. Probably from like a logistical point of view and a time perspective, you're probably like, if it's a residential job,
it's an hour trip in London.
An hour trip in London, and you probably don't want to say to them.
As well.
As I said, we mainly specialise in social housing now. So it's like 80 to 90% of our work. So
Is that council contracts or is that
council
just
contracts? Yeah. So we
do you have to tender for them.
So no, we've essentially how it works is we get all of our work by onboarding with large maintenance companies, right? So they're the ones that will tender for the housing contracts, like 10-year contracts.
Like right. And then, like Mears and people like that.
So we work for the likes of some of those. Yeah. So, and then it's a case of onboarding with them, but onboarding with them isn't actually as straightforward as people think because you have to have certain accreditation. So we, like all last year, we've done our construction line gold, which is so hard
all
to
all the different insurances. And
oh
stuff.
Man, it is like the one of the hardest things I've ever done getting our construction line gold. The accreditations, there's so much things from a health and safety perspective you have to have.
And when you're going into social housing as well, obviously, if something was to go wrong,
of course.
I bet it's like you fitted our carpet since then, the TV ain't working. So they want a new TV.
Not even that. Obviously, if you've hurt yourself, then it's the liability.
Well, it's funny you say that. 2 days ago,
he fitted my lino floor and I slipped over and broke my neck.
Last week we had a fitter cut his finger, like quite bad, but it was okay. So we pulled him off site and just rearranged the job to be redone. Obviously, we reported it on our accident register that I've got in-house. But as I said, it was not a big accident. Like, he was fine. No hospital, nothing. And I got an email 2 days ago from the client saying, oh, we've spoken to the tenant from this job. They said that your fitter had an accident. If so, why haven't you reported it to us? And I was like, oh my God, it was only like a plaster type thing. But yeah, they're so on it because they're probably worried about losing the contracts and so on.
Right, if one of your fitters then also try to say, oh, well, I've injured myself. You know, that's the thing.
You then have to make sure you're doing your risk assessments before they go into every job. So essentially, like, social housing work is our bread and butter, and there's so much of it, but it's not as easy to onboard with these companies. So once you onboard, it's good because there's a great volume of work. But it's an interesting one because a lot of flooring companies stay away from the type of work because, don't get me wrong, like, a lot of people do look after their houses and a lot of people don't. So they don't want to go and do someone's like pissy bathroom floor and so on. So it's like finding a middle ground is really difficult. It's such an interesting industry to navigate because then you've got to find the right fitters that will do the type of work. Then you've got to give them a good enough day rate to be able to know that some jobs are going to be okay, some jobs are not. And there's just so many variables to it. However, from a positive perspective, like in terms of workload, like we do an average of like 40 to 50 jobs a week.
Are you the only company that works with that, say Bromford's for instance? Or do they have three or four companies?
So I know some of them will definitely have other subcontractors because the volume of work is impossible for, like, we struggle to keep up with it now. We're doing like 50 jobs a week. So they will have other companies, and then within that company there will be set housing associations where I know we might be the only flooring company that works on that contract. So it's just about obviously keeping them happy, showing them that you can keep up with the volume of the work, because if you don't, you can potentially lose the work. So so much involved, and it is super stressful, but it is good. And as I said, that's why I started becoming more vocal on social media, because when I was getting started, there wasn't really anyone, as I was saying to you, that I could go to and ask for advice. It's social media is so powerful in that aspect. Like, it really is. Like, really,
and it's the same for companies. Your social media side of stuff's quite hands-on.
Tell us a bit more about Vanguard then as a business.
I mean, as a business, so we started off as a company called JK Land. So the land family started the company back in the 40s in Exeter, same site that we are currently on. And they started engineering and manufacturing window grills, blanks, bulkheads. That was all we did. And then I think it was early 90s, we sort of went into your roof bars. And our first order came, I think it was in 91, Sweb, who are now EDF, the energy company.
Right. Wow.
They were our very first order for a set of roof bars back in the 90s. And then from there, it's just developed, it's just grown. And we've become a one-stop shop, if you like, for roof bar, roof van storage, accessories, security products.
Yeah.
So it is that kind of place where you can take your van to and we can fully kit it out.
Mm. Do you do that in-house, or have you got franchises around the country?
Yeah, so not franchises. We have approved fitters. Right. So we do work with van converters, supply and fit companies all around the country. little bit overseas into Europe, but it's a completely different market altogether.
It's mainly UK.
Yeah, mainly UK at the minute, but conversations are being halved. So yeah, they will buy our products and then they will fit them to the fleets. But everything is manufactured on site in Exeter. Yeah. So we are a true British manufacturer.
I saw the Made in Britain logo.
Yeah, it's something we are, you know, I know as a business and the senior directors are very proud of, and they always ask that we shout it from the rooftops we're out, because, you know, it's a great thing. So everything is made on site. It allows us to have full control of.
Is it a big site you've got then, is it?
It's a fair road size.
I imagine it quite a big.
It's a fair road
but
size.
If you're building or designing and making.
Look, Mark, you've already been invited.
Yeah.
You can see for yourself, Mark.
Oh, yeah. Carry on then.
There's a barbecue as well, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. So we're right by the Exeter Airport. So location-wise, it's ideal. So right on the motorway.
How many square foot?
Pass. I want to say about 20-odd thousand.
Wow.
We own the land, so we do lease some of the office blocks out to companies. Yeah. So we own the whole land that we're
and that
on.
Was bought early when you
in the
when
40s.
It's set up.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So as a business, we've done all right. But one of the things and one of the messages that as a business, even though we've grown substantially into a £10 million business from what you know from nothing, they don't want to lose that culture and ethos that the company have.
Yeah.
They don't want to become a big corporate. They want to be able to, if you've got a problem or you want to order, you know, we've got people in the business that have been with us for 20 odd years.
Yeah, you've probably got the capacity to
The only flip side on that, and I was always of that mantra, and yes, some people can scale to that size without the corporate side coming in, but obviously our new owners that have brought us, it's very corporate.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, looking at it, I look back now and think, I would never get to that size that we're going to go to if you don't become more corporate, because you have to, like, there's a structure when you're a family business and you think like a family business. You don't think like a corporate.
Yeah.
To become bigger if than you are, you have to think like somebody that's bigger. Mm. And unfortunately...
And did you never think that then, Al?
So in my head, I always wanted more. I'm never happy with what I've got. I always want more. So, like, when we sold the business, my thesis was to grow, I would have had to set up warehousing in Australia, in the EU, in America, and actually go over and train people or stay over there for a certain period of time. Obviously, now I've got kids, it's nigh on impossible to do that, because I'd either have a business or have a wife. Yeah. I say to my wife, you're lucky because I chose
yeah, sometimes you'd rather the business.
But you think global, but to be truly global, you have to go and do that, and you have to have that corporate structure in place.
Yeah.
And you do lose a bit of that. But obviously in here still, we've still got that vibe, but behind the scenes, the financials, the strategy, everything.
It's corporate.
It's a lot more corporate now.
But
but in here with us, because we all know each other, it's not. But to actually truly grow, you have to lose that.
I agree. I think it's about finding the balance, and I think you're right. The internally, it's still keeping that culture.
But it's hard to let that go
completely.
You don't want to lose the customer service side.
And that's one of the big things, and certainly for me, who goes out and sees customers and fitters and so on, one of the big things that always crops up is the fact that, you know, they can speak to
accessible
the same person, they're dealing with the same people. We operate on next day because we hold a lot of stock on site.
Really? Wow.
So if you order one of our products before 3 o'clock, you'll have it the next day.
Wow.
You know? And that's a big selling point. And
especially to get it from, you know, the down exit away.
Yeah, absolutely.
To go completely.
It's not bloody France, mate.
But it's not Mexico.
Hey, those drinks were straight on the table as soon as it got to about there.
No, but just to, like you say, before 3 o'clock, then that window, you've got to get that picked.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's coming into, you know, whoever in the office, picked on the thing, done, out. It's good going.
I suppose you guys must have your own fleet to be able to do that.
So we've only got a couple of vehicles that are, we call them our demo vans, but they've got all of our products on. And I can talk about roof bars and security locks or whatever it may be, but until you see them, touch them, and feel them.
This is where it clicked for me about the corporate side. Obviously now I'm deep in it. I'm knee deep in KPIs and all the rest of it.
Oh, you've changed now.
Somebody said to me, because obviously we're the same as you, so if you order before 3, it's next day delivery, apart from when we've got a sale on and MJ Tiff goes crazy with his discount. And then it slips to maybe five days at the peak, because it's just carnage down there with the volume of orders. But somebody said to me, they said, well, you go on about family business. Well, when's your cut-off? 3 o'clock. Or when's next cut-off? 10 p.m. Or when's, like, some of the bigger wholesalers now are doing, well, if you order before midnight, it'll be there for you in 7 in the morning. Wow. And that's the mindset of the corporate versus the family business. Yeah. We think what we're doing is, you know, we're doing it before 3. But actually, but to get to that point, you've got to change the mindset of the business. Mm.
Are you wasting time? I think that some of you probably are, and I have a solution for you. Nobody wants to do any type of admin. Now, I have a solution for you, and it is called Tradeify. It's a fully automated job scheduling, invoicing, and quoting all in one place. Now, that software is going to save you 12 hours a week, and all by using a simple software solution. Now, you can try it for 2 weeks absolutely free, no cards needed, and you'll even get support in person from Tradeify themselves. Now, when you're done, you can always come back to me and thank me, but just enjoy the extra 12 hours that you're going to gain from just using the software.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we in Vanguard have done over the years is, I think as a company, we've been guilty of maybe being like set in our ways. Mm. It was probably just after, sort of post-COVID. So we had a change, we got a new MD in, and then the previous MD is now our chairman. Okay. My line manager, my boss, is third generation to the Land family. Okay. So they've been very set in their ways and they've been very successful, but you're right, it's about changing that mindset. So now we've got a new MD with fresh ideas.
Yeah.
There's a whole new infrastructure in place in the business with MPD teams and engineers and developing new products. So that mindset and that has changed. It's about keeping that family feel internally and from a customer point of view, still having that. So to give an example, our biggest competitor, who's probably the roof rack you've got.
What is it? Thou shall not be mentioned.
They are the market leader.
Right.
And it's only us and them really in terms of roof bars and so on. Yeah. But one of their biggest downfalls is they have gone too corporate. They've lost that
accessibility.
That relationship between customer and
that
and
face.
If you've got a problem with your roof rack, because
even trying to order something from their website feels very strange. You almost feel like you're ordering something from another country, and
there's a few factors when you're dealing with a company. It's price, it's the service you're getting and the quality of the product. They're probably the three main things that people buy Vanguard.
What I found with the roof rack that I had off you, and so I had it delivered, then fitted it myself.
How did you find that?
I'm waiting for you to say it. I was upset because mine didn't whistle.
mine was absolutely perfect. What I was impressed with was how easy it was to follow the instructions, and also within them instructions, there was that QR code that linked me to the YouTube video.
That's right.
That is gold.
Yeah,
to be able to see it there, because I remember opening it, I think I said to you, Nate, I opened it up, just seeing a rake, a screw, and everything. Mm. And I'm quite, you know,
you particular. Never do a McCarno?
but okay, so IKEA shelving. I put everything into lay it all out. I don't just have it piled up, lay it all out. But to follow the instructions that you supplied and the link to that YouTube was perfect. Yeah. Absolute diamond do.
How long did it take you?
Yeah, but what? I'm intrigued. But to go to that, so you must have a guy that sits there, plots all that out.
Absolutely.
That's a job. But that guy needs a pay rise.
So the instructions are probably the most integral part of what we do.
Because if you think, he's going to know to put that there, you've got to sort of preempt that stupid person doing it, where yes, it's a bolt and the hole's there, but you've got to cover everything.
Absolutely. So when you're dealing with your big van converters and your supply and fit who are physically fitting these products day in, day out, they're fitting them for a fleet. It's all about time and money.
Yeah, of course.
If our roof bars or rack takes 30 minutes to fit, but our competitors take 15 minutes to fit, ones are they going to order?
Course,
so the instructions are such a key part to what we do. We've got a new product that's coming out for production end of this, I think it's end of February, beginning of March, which is like a ladder loader. So housing associations, councils, people that are working at heights and are real health and safety cautious.
You could take it off.
You know, your rollers that help you get your ladders on. So we've got a sort of mechanism that you can actually physically on a latch pull your ladders down.
A
bit like a loft catch.
Instead of getting it off manually.
Yeah. And just load it back on. So
is that something that will clip onto the rack then?
Yeah. So you put it on top of the actual roof bars. Again, the reason we've done it, it's a big product for us because there's only one company that offer this particular product, so they've got the full market.
Right.
But there's no good bringing a product to market if it's not better, if it's going to be more expensive, because you need to give fleets a reason to change. So if they've been using...
How long have they had that then? How long has that one been out?
It's got to be at least over 5 years.
So how come you haven't come out earlier with it then?
Because we haven't needed to.
And you've got to know there's a market.
Yeah, so we've done a lot of market research over the last 12 months, 24 months. Right. We've gone out to these customers.
Because did you look then and go, you know, they're selling that. That's going well. We need to get in there.
And also the cost to make it is a lot.
Yeah. Then but also installers might say to them, look, we got this. It's a bag of shit. Yeah. Can you do, like, this is the only one. We've got no other option.
It's not a product that you need. Yeah. So it's house and association councils where it's health and safety conscious, where they have to have it as a tick box. Mm. So it isn't an aesthetically pleasing product. Yeah. It's a tick box.
Yeah.
So there hasn't really been as much of a demand for it, but there's a load of money in it. It just, the cost to make it, the cost to ship it. So we can either have it
To develop it as well.
Yeah, develop it. We can ship it pre-assembled or it's self-assembled on
It's
delivery.
Quite a big unit, isn't it?
It's huge, yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose as a business, once you get to a certain level as a business, you can almost like create something and have a market to sell it to away, essentially. Yeah. It's not like you then have to find a whole bunch of other customers.
Yeah, they've already got people fluffed up for it. You can go in and go, better price point, off you go.
And one of the things, security and locks have probably been the one product we've been focused on for the last four years because the demand on van crime and van theft. So what we didn't want to do, we had to try and get a big lion's share of that market from another big competitor rather than, right, we'll do a lock, now let's move on to doing a ladder loader and not actually getting the locks correct.
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure that we took a big portion of that business, which we've done, and now we're in a position where we can focus on this particular product. So we didn't just want to start, you know, bringing out new products left, right, and centre. It's about getting it done properly, then looking at, right, what's next.
I think every tradesman I know has had their van attempted to be broken into.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like around.
The van thing is just so
like a
rife.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Somebody hasn't robbed you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's just so rife on any podcast you watch, all over the socials. It's rife.
Yeah. We had ours done at B&Q, and I was in there for like 10 minutes.
Middle of the day.
And I parked right by the entrance because it was like it was right by the trade entrance. I wasn't like parked in the car park 1 minute.
Just it just makes you laugh because everybody's in that much of a daydream. No one even notes.
Yeah, that's
like the norm.
And they'll look like tradespeople so people don't batter an eyelid.
Yeah.
He's pulling a load of gear out the back of there.
He's there with a drill.
If you haven't got the right security products on, they'll be in and out of that van in 30-45 seconds. And like you say, it'll just look like they own the van.
The person that tried to break into ours didn't actually drill in the right spot, so it just had like a hole in it, and he didn't actually get in, which was obviously great.
Yeah.
But then, like literally 1 week later, they got into another one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I'm part of a lot of social media groups where you get a lot of like lock fitters and that, just because it's good information intel for me to look at and us as a business. But you also have the other side of it where van thefts are on. And they talk amongst themselves about particular makes, models, tricks and techniques to get into these vehicles.
See, we've said, haven't we, and we jokingly mentioned it the other day, if we could get an ex-van
thief. Tea leaf.
Yeah, honestly, you know, blur his face up, I'm Johnny. You know, the joking aside, if we could somehow get one and
show how quick it is.
You know,
but we could never
ever say that he was coming on until we record it, because he'd leave here, there'd be fucking tradesmen in the car park. But if you could get someone just to have an insight to go,
why do you do this? Do you think about the effects of it?
Yeah,
because some people, obviously ruins if you go into someone's van and it's got like thousands.
Yeah,
like,
their livelihood's gone.
Floor fitters, we don't have expensive tools, but if you're like a trippy or
Dave, we had on here, been done like 16 times over.
Wait, what? 10,
we had him on a few months ago.
Just take your tools in the house. It was like,
he got his tools robbed out of his house.
He was then taking them out of his van, locking them in his shed at the mummy's garden, and they were still getting them.
He must have done a dodgy job.
He was looking out of his bedroom window when they finished, and the guy literally just shut the door and went, "Thanks for your tools, mate."
No.
I fucked off, yeah.
Ah, man, that's so bad.
Yeah.
I've heard some horror stories from customers. I mean, my brother got done during COVID, and he's works himself as an electrician, and all his tools were stolen. You know, that is his.
They just left him with a dustpan and brush. Yes.
So dust sheet.
They ain't even got one of them on the van. You know, Bundy.
That's his livelihood, isn't it? And if it's a fleet, then the impact and the emotional side is not. Yeah. But, you know, that's still one individual. That's it's just the road. It's a van. It's not on the road.
The time to get.
There's so many
tools, and you never get the full value back.
Yeah. But I was out seeing someone the other day, and they broke into the van and actually physically stole the van.
Right.
And then this is outside his house. And then they were only young lads, and they were, you know, hoodies, balaclavas. Mm. But anyway, as it happened, these particular people who stole the van got back in touch with him and said, "Look, we've got your van.
We'll sell it back
if you want it back.
Yeah,
this is how much it's going to cost you."
Yeah.
It was like a 25 grand van. They were, I think it was £5,000. He said they wanted.
That's actually happened to me with a laptop.
Before. Really?
Yeah, and they were like,
"Stole my laptop and meet said us here, send it back to
five
me.
Grand or whatever it was, and you can have your van that's back, so not crazy. Not damaged." And he was like, "Well, I'll either take the risk and
I'll just get it. It's either genuine or I'll just get it on the insurance and be like,
yeah."
But he went there, paid the money, got his van back. No,
you're joking.
No damage to the vehicle.
They nicked it 2 weeks later.
But
that, you know,
that's what I'd be worried.
But but the fact that they've done that, it's a massively calculated thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
So it's what we've seen as a business is it started off as chances, just stealing vans for tools and selling them online. To now, it's at a point where it's organised crime.
Yeah.
So we can spot patterns of van thefts up and down the country if they go to certain areas and so. And we're quite shielded in Exeter. Mm. It happens, but compared to other parts
you've
of
just
country,
put a target on your back now.
But it is increasing.
Yeah.
We always say to people we talk to, it's, you know, you can put all the security locks and products on your vehicle.
If they want to get in, they'll drill through
you know, through the roof if they have to. Yeah. What it's about, unfortunately, and it's hard to say this, is it's about making your vehicle safer than the one next to it.
Yeah.
Because if yours has got additional locks and it's going to take them a longer period to get into, which one are they, and that one hasn't, which one are they going to choose? So,
did you want to do a final thought?
Do final thought, or we can do any questions come in, Nave?
Who wants to go first?
I will.
Go on, Rod.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. I just wanted to know, where do you see your business going from here? Because obviously you said you'd scaled back.
Yeah.
But what do you actually want from it? Do you want to be off the tools completely? Or
I'm not, but yeah. I ask myself this all the time, to be fair. I'll go through.
Don't start a business.
I'll go through different emotions. Sometimes I think, oh God, this is so difficult. Like, do I really want, if this is the stress that is happening when we're at this turnover, do I really want it to get to 5 million, 10 million? Mm. And then other times I will sit down and analyze 20 different flooring companies that are at multi-million pound turnovers. And I'm like, well, what can I do to get to that stage? Realistically, with just how I am, I do naturally want to build it to a certain amount of turnover, but more than anything, I just want it to become like a nice, not stress-free because it's always going to be stressful, but I just want to get it to a stage manageable stage where it's not as stressful.
I'm going to kill his dreams off now.
if your company stopped being stressful, would that be a stress in itself? Mm. Why is it not stressing me out?
I'll be honest, I have more help now and it's less stressful. But the stress never goes away.
Yeah.
Because you're always thinking,
what can I do next?
I think you're either that person or you're not.
Yeah, of course.
I think as the years have gone as well, like for example, if we was having cash flow problems this time last year, I would be like in close to tears about it because you're thinking, how am I going to get everyone paid within the next couple of days? Whereas now I think about, because I'm so emotionally damaged, I think about everything so logically.
You become hardened.
Yeah, I'm like, right, okay, this is the scenario. This is who can be paid. This is who can't, who can take the hit more. And obviously you don't want to ever be in that position anyway. So we've done a lot to get to the stage where cash flow is better. One thing I didn't do when I started my company up until recently, because I was afraid of using credit accounts because I just didn't want to get caught up in like owing loads of money. Whereas I've got to the stage where I'm like, no, we actually need to do it to manage cash flow better. But essentially, like, I do want to grow it to a certain stage, but I've realised over the past few, I don't want it to become like a, because there's some flooring companies, like big ones that turn over, there's a few around me that do, one that does 57 mil a year turnover, another one does 38. You can scale it to a big company, but I would want to get to, like, you know, a nice size.
10 mil
would be fine. And from, the thing is, with the stage that we've got to now, and with the clients that we have, with the opportunities that are being presented to us, getting to them sort of figures aren't unrealistic at all. It's just a case of doing what you've done three times over or four times over. Yeah, but in a nutshell, I'd like to get the flooring company to a certain level, and then I would like to do other things as well, for sure.
Good for you, man.
Mm. For me?
That's all right, yeah.
Go on.
Why British manufacturing? Because it's, obviously it's got the prestige behind it, but it's so incredibly expensive.
Lead times is probably the biggest reason, so there is loyalty in the industry, but not a huge amount. So if you take internal van racking, it's a very competitive marketplace. We know where we sit in that. It's not our speciality, but we do it. There's a lot of companies that do real bespoke high-end. So you can go to them as a plumber, Sparky, whatever, and say, look, I want X, Y, and Z. This is what I want it to look like. They'll do drawings for you. They'll design it. They'll make it.
He wants a hammock in his.
And you're looking at lead times of you know, 6 weeks plus.
Yeah. And big outlays.
And
big
people
money.
Don't want to wait. Yeah. You know, and again, if you're kitting out a handful of vans, it all adds up.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's allowing us to have control, I think, is the key factor, rather than relying on someone else or buying it in from, you know. And people, people still like the fact that they're dealing with someone who's a British manufacturer.
Mm.
One thing I do want to mention, if I can, is we're exhibiting as a company at the CV show, the commercial vehicle show, at the Birmingham NEC.
When's that?
April the 23rd to the 25th.
It will go out before that.
It will?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got to stand there.
So what was that, April the 23rd?
23rd to the 25th at the NEC in Birmingham. So it's the biggest fleet show of the year. So, yeah, all fleet.
It'll be down.
Manufacturing.
I'll come down with my shotgun.
Yeah. Come along, have a look.
I might be literally down the road anyway.
Ford are the big sponsors, so they've got like...
Mark's like, I'm rentable for days.
Yeah. I can do a two-day deal.
I don't know what the stand number is off the top of my head, but yeah, we've got a big stand.
Nice.
So, yeah, come along if you...
Yeah, spot on. Final thoughts?
Yeah. Final thoughts?
Yeah.
Any knowledge that you want to drop, or any, you know, a little message for people?
I reckon Rod's got some cracking little final thoughts.
I feel like he's going to give us like
just a bit. Yeah, I think it'll be similar to what in terms of what we spoke about when
we just started a business.
I went to the toilet. No. In terms of starting a business, I would just say, like, do as much research as possible before you go into it. And like we were saying, is speak to people that are in that industry and ask for as much advice as possible.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you'd be surprised.
Find someone who's done it.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people would be willing to give you, like, free advice.
I think the advice thing and the helping of people in trades has shifted massively in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
People want to help other people.
Asking free advice is invaluable, I think. There's so many things that if I didn't ask questions for, I would have felt like we was doing something extremely wrong. But when someone in a better position gives you a logical reason of why that is happening, you're like, oh, well, okay, just need to keep pushing on.
Yeah,
there's plenty of work out there for everyone.
From a like work perspective, I think there's so much work, and houses are getting built all the time. Mm. From a trades perspective, obviously I know, like, with new build, some people say that a lot of sites are quiet and stuff, but there's so much build. I was reading something the other day, just yesterday, that there's a guy on TikTok, a Scottish guy, who reviews, like, new... he's an architect, and he reviews, like, the building of houses, right?
Right.
And he was saying something like, only 4% of the UK is built on at the moment. So and there's a huge housing shortage. So he thinks that the government, over time, will just be building more, because You go over and you feel like there's buildings everywhere, but there is apps.
If they don't, the price of housing keeps going up.
Yeah, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have
less affordable.
Yeah, they're going to have to start building more houses soon. So in terms of from a work perspective, I think trades will be fine.
About you, Chris, what advice can you give from a Vanguard perspective?
What advice?
Well, advice or thoughts or...
Oh, you can shamelessly plug the shit out of
Buy a Vanguard. Yeah. I think if you've got a van or you know someone who's got a van or you are a fleet manager and you run a fleet of vans and you know, you're looking for a one-stop shop solution, then come and have a look at us. We're good people to deal with.
Again, British made.
Yeah.
Support Britain.
If we can do it, we'll do it. That's kind of the mentality of the company, really, which is not a bad thing. So, get in touch.
Spot on.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on, boys.
Appreciate it.
Really good.
And Mark's itching to know what you...
let's get out there and find out what it is.
Let's go.
Find out what it is. We're all going to be millionaires.
Everyone needs to sign an NDA.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.